And welcome to WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo, and I'll be sitting in for Linda Sarsour, who is traveling. This is What's Going On, and I'll be your host right after this theme.
Brother, what's up?
This is a good recording, man. Yeah, I can dig it.
Solid, right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today.
Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
And what is going on? Well, this show is going to address that very question, as it does, as what's going on. This program that you hear every morning at 7 a.m. Monday to Friday across the schedule here at WBAI, and today, particularly today. And what a important evening it's been here in New York and across the United States and, of course, around the world. First, we're going to go to the news, the Pacifica Network News, and then we're going to come back and talk about the protests. And if you're just getting up and looking at the papers or turning on your TV, hopefully not turning on your TV, but listening to WBAI, you're going to find out about the police raids at City College of New York, the police raids at Columbia University, the pulling down of the tents and the end of the occupation of Hamilton Hall, and the fighting that broke out across this country on the other coast, the left coast, they call it at times, in California, UCLA campus, where real fighting has broken out. And it's really a struggle over there, and we'll be talking more about that as well. Dozens of campuses across the United States are now involved in this struggle to end the war against Gaza, to end the genocide, and to stop this fighting. And I'm just shocked looking at police in California, UCLA right now, using sticks and other weapons, gas grenades and the rest of you to arrest, to really engage in some brutal fighting. I haven't seen street fighting like this in America since the Vietnam era. And it's Tampa, Florida as well. They're showing right now University of South Florida fighting, Austin, Texas fighting. It seems like America is coming to one of those points in its history. Let's hear more from the Pacifica Network News.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It's not lost on me the role that Mike Johnson played in the lead up to January 6th. However, we want to turn the page.
House Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar says enough Democrats will vote to stop any motion to remove Speaker Mike Johnson. While some expressed reluctance at saving a man who worked to overturn the 2020 election, others highlighted his ability to pass aid for Ukraine. Hard-right Republicans, including Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, are frustrated with Johnson's willingness to work with Democrats. But South Carolina Congressman Joe Wilson says they're unlikely to do better.
I just have absolute faith in his integrity, his conservative background. He's a person of courage, and he's proving it right now.
As pro-Palestinian encampments spread on college campuses, Republicans are calling on Education Secretary Miguel Cardona to cut off federal funding to any school that doesn't enforce civil rights protections for Jews. Cardona says student safety is a top priority and the department will act to protect it.
I'm very concerned with the reports of anti-Semitism. I've spoken to Jewish students who have feared going to class as a result of some of the harassment that they're facing on campuses.
Student protesters have illegally occupied a building at Columbia University. The White House has condemned that, and administrators say they'll be expelled. Former President Donald Trump says the students should face punishments similar to his supporters who broke into the Capitol on January 6th.
I wonder if that's going to be the same kind of treatment they gave J6. Let's see how that all works out. I think I can give you the answer right now.
In a long Time magazine interview, Trump repeated that he'll likely pardon the hundreds convicted for the January 6th insurrection. He also said he would let states monitor women's pregnancies and punish them for getting abortions. Meanwhile, the judge in his New York hush money trial ruled Trump violated a gag order 9 times and warned he could be jailed if he does it again. In a historic shift, the Biden administration will move to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug and recognize its medicinal uses. The proposal would not legalize weed outright, but could reduce future sentences. 16-year-olds in Newark, New Jersey can now vote in local school board elections. In Massachusetts, nearly a dozen municipalities are seeking state approval to lower the voting age for all local elections. State Senator Becky Rausch says she'd like to see it happen nationwide because it would help get young people in the habit of voting.
And they are active members of every community I represent, and they are both contributors to and beneficiaries of community and local government services.
Some Republican lawmakers contend teenagers lack the ability or motivation to fully understand what's at stake and that Democrats just want the votes. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lives in the balance. There are people on the fire. There are children on the camps. There is blood on the wire. Of the wars that are fought in places where we can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way. They sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion. The same time they sell us our wars. I wanna know who the men in the shadows are. I wanna hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the balance. There are people on the fight.
welcome back. And there are lives in the balance, Jackson Brown. And throughout the United States, lives have been in the balance as they have been in the Gaza Strip since October of earlier this year, or last year, I should say, October of last year. And it's interesting that yesterday was 56 years to the day after the 1968 student occupation at Columbia University. That was violently cleared by the New York City Police Department at the time. Back then, 177 were arrested. Today, I'm told, over 100 were arrested to mark that anniversary. 56 years later at Columbia University at Hamilton Hall, which was the scene of the occupation back in April of 1968. Another time, but with similar overtones as today. It seems there was across America, there was almost coordinated. I don't know if just everything came to a head at the same time, but all of a sudden in the last day or two, encampments which had received permission at City College of New York, where negotiations were continuing at Columbia College, Columbia University, at UCLA, where for days and weeks there had been a encampment which was permitted by the administrations of those schools, all of a sudden, boom, the university said you had to leave. Moments later, police were flooding into those campuses. Last night, a group foreshadowing or foreseeing that was happening at Columbia a couple of nights ago had entered Hamilton Hall and had taken over that hall and renamed it after a six-year-old Hind Hall, after a six-year-old Palestinian child who was killed with her family as she tried to escape the bombing in Gaza. So it's no longer Hamilton Hall, and I think it'll be always known as Hind Hall after Hind Rajab. Police went in after those students last night and dragged them out, and that moment was captured in this clip. And dozens were arrested. I've heard over 100. We haven't got a final number yet. Last time students were protesting Vietnam and Columbia's plans to expand its campus into Harlem. And guess what? This time they're also protesting the campus plans to expand into Harlem. But instead of the Vietnam War, it's the Israeli war or genocide against Gaza that's killed over 34,000 people. And believe me, that number is going to go way up because there may be as many as 10,000 people underneath the rubble that haven't been counted. And we'll not know for weeks or months the total numbers killed there, most children. One of the times in history when we can watch something like a genocide playing out in public. At UCLA, maybe even more disturbing, last night about 60 students protesting against the protesters, a counter-protest of pro-Israeli students, literally attacked the pro-Palestinian encampment of peaceful students who had been peacefully, you know, living there and expressing their point of view. Those Israeli, pro-Israeli students crashed, you can see the videos, crashed into that uninvited and without provocation, crashed into that encampment and started using sticks and other weapons against the protesters who fought back as best they could. Police followed up in allegedly to keep the two groups separate, but from all accounts, firmly took the side of the counter-protesters in attacking the Gaza protest. There is nothing new there. You have to understand here in New York, if you think it's any different, Chief John Schell, Chief Patrol of New York City Police Department, has been regularly tweeting on the NYPD webpage. I haven't seen, I've been told what was tweeted, heard what was tweeted from the media during the mayor's press conference yesterday, claiming that the protesters were less than human and not in, had no right to be there and no right to express their opinion, were he advocated their not just suspension, but expulsion. And in fact, following orders maybe of Chief Schell, the university there, Columbia University, has said it would expel any students involved in what happened at Columbia University. The last night, Hind Hall, Mayor Adams has firmly taken the side of Israel in this and has become a vicious opponent of the students. He's claimed that and has made no secret of that feeling on his part. And the mayor has taken quite pleasure in all this, claiming that the protesters are not students, but outside agitators. And it's very interesting for an African-American man to adopt the position, basically, of the Southern segregationists who claim that it was outside agitators coming down south to help the people down there, as if the people down south didn't need that help if they got it, and as if outside agitators created the unrest. You know, that's just a way of dehumanization, Mr. Mayor, and you know that as well as anybody else, to make it okay for your cops to go in there and use whatever violence necessary. And there were reports of both, you know, nonviolence. The police came in there, and unfortunately the protesters were nonviolent, but there were incidents of unprovoked violence by the police, as reported in the New York Times and other and from other sources, from people who were there and eyewitnesses. Among those eyewitnesses was Melanie Marich, who is a journalism student at City University of New York, and CCNY, City College of New York, was also, it's not as heralded in the papers, but that's my alma mater where I got my master's degree and became a teacher. And at City College, there was an encampment. I visited that encampment a couple of days ago. It was a peaceful, beautiful place where people were basically sitting around a bunch of tents in an open area out of the sight of most of the students, and making their feelings known. Well, they were told they could have that encampment, and boom, last night, that promise was reneged. Not unexpected, I guess. And here is my interview with Melanie Marich.
My name is Melanie Marich. I am a graduate student at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY.
What did you see tonight at CUNY?
Lots of things, Paul. I'll start with just telling you that I've been in and out of the encampment since Thursday night. They started up on Thursday morning at 8 a.m. When I got there today around 11 a.m. before any news of encampment sweep, things were very calm. There were kids playing tag. There were folks painting posters. Around 4 o'clock, City College students received an email from City College and CUNY leadership, citing that for a number of different safety concerns and rule violations, they were going to be clearing the encampment before classes start back up tomorrow morning. CUNY is currently on spring break right now. Classes are set to get back going tomorrow. That email came around 4. Over the next couple of hours, myself and my colleagues tried reaching out to CUNY administration and City College administration. We didn't hear back from any of them. Around 6:30, 7 o'clock, we started getting word that they were closing the gates at different points of campus. Specifically, the North Gate on 140th Street and Convent had been open to anyone, really, this entire time. I mean, folks have been walking their dogs through there, and it closed. No one could tell us why or how, or if folks were going to be let out any other way. Around 7 o'clock, protesters, not part of the CUNY encampment, started gathering outside of the North Gate and chanting. Protesters from inside the encampment, which was, or from inside of the campus, which was now closed, sort of joined them at the gate. From there, a group of protesters inside of campus, around 7:30, protesters from inside campus started running south we weren't sure exactly where they were running, and so we followed, and what we saw was that they tried to occupy an administrative building on campus. Public safety was very quickly there. There was some conflict there, and it doesn't look like anyone was able to actually get inside of the building, or if they did, they were in and removed very quickly. From there, campus safety started to pepper spray the crowd that was there. Not everyone who was there was trying to get into that building. There were folks who were just there to see what was going on and why campus safety was running. Campus safety started pepper spraying pretty indiscriminately. I counted about a dozen folks who were pepper sprayed in the face, including a journalist who was clearly marked as press, who was up close and filming. He was pepper sprayed pretty severely in the eyes. From there, folks dispersed from that area, and about 20 or 30 minutes after that, so I think that puts us at around 8 o'clock, is when we first started seeing NYPD enter campus in riot gear. They entered from the south side of campus where the gate had been closed. They opened the gate and they marched from the south gate to the north gate. They didn't stop anywhere on campus necessarily. I think it looks like they were just using that road to get to where the outside protesters were on 140th and Convent. I counted somewhere between 60 and 80 NYPD officers in riot gear, and that included helmets, batons. We saw hand ties, and it wasn't clear whether or not their body cams were on. We were looking for that as well. Some were. I can't confirm that all were. That was around 8 o'clock. At that point, things inside of campus slowed down. Inside of the encampment itself, folks inside the encampment started to barricade. And they were using all kinds of things to barricade, including outdoor furniture that was already there. They had plywood, they had police barricades, they had some kind of netting, and they were barricading the perimeters of the encampment that they have been on since Thursday morning. But up to this point, around 8 o'clock, as all of this was happening, NYPD was not engaging with anyone on campus. They were engaging with protesters outside of campus. I didn't have a very clear vantage point of what was happening there, but my colleagues who were outside of campus near there have told me that arrests started happening. Folks were put into NYPD buses. We don't have an independent number verifying how many folks were arrested tonight from there, but arrests did happen. And there have been reports of violence from the police against protesters.
What kind of violence?
I have seen videos of protesters getting pushed down onto the ground by NYPD. It seems like some extreme force is being used. I can only speak to what I saw with the pepper spray from the CUNY Public Safety earlier, but I am still getting reports in from my colleagues who are on the ground, and we're trying to compile and verify the video footage that we are seeing.
What do you expect is going to happen tomorrow?
Right now, as we are speaking, it's midnight on Tuesday night going into Wednesday morning. My colleagues who are still on the ground are telling me that NYPD has entered campus and has entered the encampment specifically. They're telling me it looks like they're sweeping this encampment tonight. Things are happening really quickly. Even over just the last couple of hours, the situation has changed really fast. Based on what I've seen tonight, what I'm seeing from my colleagues just a little bit downtown at Columbia, it seems like the intention is to clear this encampment.
Why do you think they picked the middle of the night?
This is a tactic that we've seen at other student protests across the country. Other encampments have also been swept in the night. I wish I could tell you what they're thinking, but that would mean they answered my calls. I can only presume to guess that this is because folks are sleeping, although from what I saw, there was no one looking very sleepy at this encampment. The City College messaging that we got was that they want this encampment cleared by tomorrow morning. I also do want to point out that in City College's messaging that went out to their students, they cited that they want this encampment cleared for the first day of classes in order to preserve safety on campus. But within a couple of minutes of that, they also announced that all classes at City College would be held remotely tomorrow.
I was just watching Mayor Adams, and he said in his press conference concerning what they're doing right now, this must end now, he said.
We'll be curious to ask him what this is specifically, and that is the thing that I'm trying to still wrap my mind around, is what exactly are the complaints being made by City College and CUNY administration? The messaging that student organizers received on Friday was that as long as everything remained peaceful, that folks would be allowed to practice their First Amendment right. I actually have the statement from press spokesperson. He said, every student has the First Amendment right to peacefully protest. We're committed to ensuring every CUNY student is safe from violence or harassment on campus and are closely monitoring the situation. That was a message from Saturday afternoon. We have been trying to get in touch with City College and CUNY administration to understand what specifically has changed since then. They have listed things in that letter, and we are trying to corroborate and understand where many of those points have come from. One of the points, for example, was that negotiations halted because student organizers went back on their word. This is something that student organizers have denied. And this was messaging that we got from student organizers on Friday after their first set of negotiations. We're looking for clarity on what exactly in these negotiations student organizers went back on. That wasn't made clear. We have not heard from City College, and we have not heard from CUNY. So to Mayor Adams' point, my question, if I were at that press conference, is what ends tonight? Because I think one of the things that we are seeing across the encampments at New York City is not a lot of continuity and not a lot of clarity from school administrations as to what they are asking of students who are protesting, what they are demanding of students, what they are looking for, and what the rules are. It feels like the rules have changed, and they're not exactly being clear with student organizers about when these rules change and why.
Protesting against the U.S. support for their ally in a war.
I don't know. I can't necessarily comment on that, but one of the things that I have been so privileged to learn more about in my couple of days here at City College is the very rich legacy of student protests and student organizing at City College specifically. This is not the first time, and, you know, I'm a journalist, I'm not a fortune teller, but I would guess this won't be the last time that students of City College take to their campus and take to the streets to protest larger issues. There is a especially rich history of Palestinian liberation organizing at City College and pro-Palestinian liberation movements at City College and across CUNY. There is a very strong network of student organizations that are for the liberation of Palestine.
Got a letter from LBJ, it said, this is your lucky day, it's time to put your khaki trousers on. Though it may seem very queer, we've got no job to give you here, so we are sending you to Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. I jumped off the old troop ship and sank in mud up to my hips. I cussed until the captain called me down. Never mind how hard it's raining, think of all the ground we're gaining. Just don't take one step outside of town. Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. Every night the local gentry slip out past the sleeping sentry, they go out to join the old VC. In their nightly little dramas, they put on their black pajamas and come lobbing mortar shells at me. But Lyndon J. Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation. I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. We go around in helicopters like a bunch of big grasshoppers searching for the Viet Cong in vain. They left the note that they had gone, they had to get down to Saigon, their government positions to maintain. And Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. Well, here I sit in this rice paddy, wondering about Big Daddy, and I know that Lyndon loves me so. Yet how sadly I remember way back yonder in November when he said I'd never have to go. But Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese.
And welcome back. This is What's Going On. I'm Paul D'Arienzo, sitting in for Linda Sarsour, who's traveling and will be back next week. And of course, where else? You're listening to WBAI New York. Tom Paxton, LBJ, told the nation. Seems like history repeats itself, just a different part of the world. And people wonder, what's happening that could possibly be sparking this crackdown across the nation against protests? We've been just heard from Melanie Marish, a young journalist up at City College of New York, who ran down what happened last night at midnight, and it continued all through the night. And we heard a clip and a little bit about what happened at Columbia University when police went into Hind Hall. Now, it used to be Hamilton Hall, but now it's Hind Hall. What could be happening? Well, right now, the Israeli government is on the verge of the tragedy beyond words. That's the UN humanitarian chief, a tragedy beyond words, the invasion of Rafah. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, said he didn't care what the United States said. He didn't care what public opinion said. He was going to go in to this small area where more than 1.3 million Palestinian refugees are huddled against a fence with nowhere to go, led by the most reactionary fascist members of the Israeli body politic, Ben Gavir and his group of Kahanists, who have said time and time again they want to wipe out the last traces of Palestinian existence in Palestine, their country. Right? I'd like to add that the previous interview was produced with the help of our program director, the indefatigable Linda Perry, who does an amazing job here at WBAI and deserves your praise and support for all the work she does to keep this station on the air and to keep it locked in with its mission statement. Take time, look up the mission statement for Pacifica Radio and for WBAI. In the meantime, we're here to take your calls. Our number, 212-209-2877. I'm your guide, Paul D'Arienzo, and I'm assisted by another indefatigable guide who is here every morning, Michael G. Haskins, who is going to help me take your calls. And, come all. I'm here. I'm like imagine me like the guy at the carnival who sits on the seat and you throw bean bags at the target. And if you hit the target, he gets dumped into the water. I've always wanted that job. I always wondered, how do you get a job doing that? Right. 212-209-2877. Michael G, do we have any calls?
Yeah. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. You on the air?
Yeah. Hi.
Good. Well, good to hear from you. Yes.
Yeah.
You're on the radio. Your question or comment.
Good morning.
Where are you calling from? Let me ask this. Let me jump in and ask first. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the Riverdale.
All right, cool. Your question or comment?
Well, my comment and observations are this. You know, there was a gathering at WBAI five, seven, 8 years ago. They put on a movie about something with the Palestinians. It was the John Kane. And we were able to ask questions. And I just made an I told the Palestinian man that they need to do something different than just protest. And they really should get out of there because that was a long time ago. And I had a sense that this was not going to, it's going to keep happening. So there, you know, people are asking for a ceasefire when there's an all-out war. People are really stuck in some sort of romantic notion. They destroyed all the colleges, practically all the hospitals. Who's going to rebuild this? It's over. What people should be protesting for is a contingent wall. What people should be protesting for is a contingent of people to go over there and get the people out of there.
Michael G., turn him down. Keep him on, but turn him down. Yeah, I just want to respond to that. Personally, I think that's totally wrong. I think the reason why they keep the battle going is because the minute the aid ships reach Gaza, the minute that aid workers are allowed into Gaza, that reconstruction of Gaza will begin. They reconstructed Warsaw, Poland. They reconstructed Buda and Pest in Hungary. They reconstructed Berlin. They reconstructed Volgograd, Stalingrad, whatever you want to call it. They reconstructed Hiroshima. They reconstructed Nagasaki. Every one of them reconstructed greater than ever. So history shows reconstruction from the rubble. In fact, Warsaw, Poland, and I've talked to people who were involved, was literally rebuilt from the very rubble that was picked up and stuck back together again by armies of young people who are among the most proudest achievements of the Polish people. So why wouldn't they be able to do that in Gaza as well? Listener, caller, you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here. Can I respond?
You heard my point.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I left you on the air.
I hear your point, but this is war, and we're also hearing it right from their mouth. We're not stopping. So I don't know why everybody, I tell you, you've got to get those people out of there.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. All right, caller, thank you very much.
All right,
thank
you very much.
Let's go on to the next call. I see your point. Let's go on to the next call. You're on the radio.
Hello.
And you're listening to WBAI. I'm Paul D'Arienzo, and you're on the air.
Am I on the air?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I don't have the radio on. Good morning.
All right.
First, I want to say, you know, thank you to all the students, all the resistors, revolutionaries now and throughout history who have put their lives, their legacies, their families, their livelihood on the line for justice. That's like an extraordinary gift that they give to everybody else, and we just really should appreciate that. These students should be, you know, applauded and upheld because they have the courage and the privilege and the freedom to be doing this, where some of us, you know, we just don't have that. As far as what's going on, you know, throughout history, you know, men have sat around and played with people's lives, and they continue to do it. We don't learn anything. We just continue to do it everywhere. There's injustice and corruption and violence and greed everywhere, and it's men that are responsible and that are doing this. And I don't know when we're going to learn from history that it doesn't get us anywhere. We tell people, children, oh, don't fight, you know, come to an agreement. But yet, in the name of a country, in the name of a people, you can, oh, I'm going to kill you. We don't agree, so I'm just going to kill you. You know, and what is that? Like, you know, what have we not learned? It's just, I don't know if humans, we're just flawed. Wherever we are, we're flawed. And, you know, we need to go back from birth and try to just educate people that we have these dualities where we can be good and we can be evil. And this is how you may be able to manage that duality because, you know.
What's the way out of this? What do you think the way out of this is, Cola?
Well, I mean, that's
given all you say is true and accurate, what's the way out?
Well, that's just the thing. That's just the question. There is no way out. I mean, unfortunately, because we just are not able to collectively care about, it's just all about self and greed. You know, these men are, they're strategizing and, you know, this need, this one, and I got stocks in this, and so I'm going to make sure that this company, Blackwater, gets to go into Iran and sell everything so that my, you know, it's all so corrupt. I mean, if we really got into the, to down that rabbit hole of all the corruption and who's what and who's doing what, I mean, I really believe that Putin and the Ayatollahs orchestrated this whole thing in the first place, enabled the Hamas to do that so that this all could happen. I mean,
but do you think that what Hamas did, I mean, you know, pick up a sprick and prick up a stone, you don't think, I mean, the implication of this is that even 9/11, even the Beirut bombing of the Marine embassy, all these attacks on the West did not just come out of thin air.
No,
that
it's
they
tragedy,
were retaliations. That even 9/11, flying the planes into those buildings, as horrific as that was in fact payback for something that happened to them by the United States and the West that we don't know about and that our government never told us about and people were totally unprepared for.
Right. Just
anyway, let's go to the next caller. Oh, go ahead. You're still on. Okay, go ahead.
I said, you know, just playing with people's lives. You know, these are lives. Like, they're nothing. Like, they're absolutely nothing. And, you know, listen, they maybe I mean, it's just be done with it, because I really feel like the unfortunate thing is that humanity, we're just not going to get any better. We're just getting worse. And so
I don't have that kind of, that's exactly the kind of thinking I believe that's been fueling this. I think there is, humanity has gotten better. You know, at different times in history, they have reached for higher ideals. Right now, we're living in a time when the United States government is, you know, behind a lot of this because they're afraid of their imperialist rivals in Russia and China. And is the reason, I mean, does anybody believe that if they had a coup in Tehran and the Iranian government came over to the United States point of view again, like it was once before, that the U.S. would care so much about Israel?
Are they ever,
anymore?
Do you think the U.S. or any of these other imperialist countries that are trying to protect their power and their interests in these individuals, the more we push, the more they're going to push back until
what about the people? The people is what it's about.
They don't care what it looks like anymore. They don't care what the optics are. They're just like, yes, this is what we're doing.
Well, we're all watching it on TV. We're watching it. You're right. We're watching a genocide on television playing out in front of the entire world. And what are, these students are the ones who are doing something about it.
Right. We all should.
And what do they get?
Ourselves.
The police. Right. Let me go on. All right. Thank you very much, caller. I want to go on to the next call, but I wanted to make a point on that. Is that I have a friend who's an international journalist who travels. He's been to Moscow and seen protests put down there. And I asked him, is there any difference between, as we were talking up at Columbia, and he goes, is there any difference between what the United States does and what Russia does? And he says, well, the United States gives a lot more personal freedoms in day-to-day life. But when it comes to things like Gaza and its allies and its wars, it is absolutely no different in crushing protests than Russia. And what I would like to posit, you know, for purposes of debate, is the United States any different? Are we being hypocritical? Is the United States being hypocritical when it claims in Russia they beat up protesters, they jail protesters, they do terrible things to protesters when it's the Ukraine war than what they're doing right now on the campuses of America, and to the UCLA even backing like right wing attackers? I mean, it's right out of Putin's playbook. How is Biden any different than Putin? He claims to be different than Putin. Trump will be even more like that. Trump has promised to be more like that. All right. Well, do we have another caller? Next caller on the line, please.
Hello. Hello.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. My name is Brother Devon from Queens. And I like to say that, you know, I respect the protesting, but at this time, that strategy, I think, has been nullified by the government. And when we hear the word outside agitators, many times those outside agitators are people from the government that's trying to infiltrate the protest, and that they cause violence and other situations that happen, and that causes the protesters to look bad in front of the eyes of the public. And then the public at that point goes against the protest because they say the protests are violent. What must happen now is that we need to financially not support the situation, because the more we support the situation financially, that's how all of these things are happening, because of the financial support. And that's one of the things.
That would you do that, caller? Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from Queens. But the way that you do
Sorry, I didn't hear that beginning. I'm trying to get my levels up here. So tell me, caller, how would you do that? How would you go about that?
First of all, boycott. Boycott is the main source that you use to affect things financially. And you have to be able to deal with institutions. And I think the college students have the right path. So we don't have to look at the protest. You just look at the strategy and continue their strategy. Even when there's no protest, you continue the strategy of boycotting, because that's the best possible way to deal with the situation. Because at this point, protesting in the streets has been nullified by the government. But what I'd like to say is that, most importantly, we have to understand white supremacy, how it works. Because once everywhere, this is just a genocide, but it's the same genocide that happened in when the Native Americans, it happened to Africans, it happened to Brazilians, it happened to everywhere that white supremacy and government went. They took over the land, genocide the people, and utilized the resources. And this is the playbook, and it's happening right now in front of our eyes, and we act like it's something new. But it's an old strategy that's been going on for hundreds of, or not thousands.
Well, you notice the song? I played a song about the Vietnam War by Tom Paxton. LBJ told the nation. Seems to be some vague similarities between LBJ, Lyndon B. Johnson. I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember him. And another old guy, Biden. You know, at least LBJ had a sense of humor when he sent troops off to die and bombed and killed people and lied to the American public. And we can just imagine what's going on because, as I said, right now, as the United Nations humanitarian chief has said, we are on the verge of a tragedy beyond words. If Israel invades Rafah, the prime minister of Israel has said he hears nothing, he sees nothing, he says nothing, but invade, invade, invade. And it's interesting that at this moment, you know, we're thousands. They're predicting thousands, untold thousands will die when the Israeli military goes into Gaza. And it's interesting that at the verge of this bloodbath, they are trying to silence protests on college campuses across the country. Do you callers think there's any connection there? Is our mayor
absolutely,
and the White House?
Well,
and the mayors of Los Angeles doing this together in coordination.
Well,
to silence protests beyond, before one of the greatest acts of murder to be broadcast to the whole world to see at Rafah in the Gaza Strip, which is about to happen. Worse than anything that's happened up till now is about to happen. And I think people don't understand that. And the purpose of protesters, and this is where I disagree about the boycotting is good, and we should. There's a boycott, divestment, sanctions movement on campuses. The boycott and sanction products that are made by Israeli businesses operating on illegally operating in occupied territory on the West Bank. And you have to understand, since 1948, every one of those developments that have been built by Israel on the West Bank is in violation of international law. All right? In violation of international law. All right? And so it's not even boycotting. It's not buying illegally sanctioned products from people who should not be there doing what they're doing. Simple as that. By international law since 1948, it's called the United Nations, and it's I can't give you the number, but there's definitely, people might know it, the number of the United Nations resolutions involving that. So next caller. We have another caller on the air, on the line. Can I fit in one or two more? Are you on the air? Michael, do we have any calls?
Are you there?
Yes, you're on the radio.
Hey, Paul, Russ in White Plains. Hey, I'm glad. Hey, I wish you had a regular show. I'd send in $50 for your five-minute show. I hope you get a regular show. The reason they're creating these riots
it
right
is,
now.
By the way, let me jump in. I don't want to interrupt you, but I want to say it is regular. It's every day at 5:55, Monday through Friday. Believe me, Russell, I thank you for your support, and I appreciate it. It is a good, you know, it's a good amount of work to do that five-minute news, and I suggest people go to it, and you can always listen to it or catch up with it by either going to the BAI archives or to my webpage, pauldirienzo.com. I'm at WordPress, pauldirienzo.wordpress.com, and you could click on it and see all the past shows that we've been doing. Over 1,200 shows since I started back at BAI in 2016. And over 300 since October. But go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
It doesn't seem easily accessible. I wish you had at least an hour. But let me quickly ask you, this is the end of the Zionist project, but they have to have these riots to justify police crackdowns before the genocide in Rafah. And I ask you, Paul, do you think this throws a new light on all the pre-World War II attacks on the German Bund? I used to think those were brave Zionists that went in and attacked people at Madison Square Garden. It throws a whole new light on the Hindenburg disaster. It was a Zionist terror attack on U.S. soil. We have to see what's been going on for a long time. And I'm telling you, we're at war with China and Russia. This is just a prelude. Gaza's going to be like Sarajevo. They're going to try and drag us into World War III. Thanks very much, Paul.
Okay. Very interesting. Well, I just say in World War II history, we had a popular front and a united front back then, and people of all different backgrounds were united together. So I would say that any assault on Nazis back in the 1930s, and I saw those pictures of the fascists being assaulted on the stage at Madison Square Garden and at the ship where the Nazi flag, the swastika flag, was ripped down from the ship. And you saw then the NYPD actually defending the rights of the Nazis to fly their flags, which, you know, is really about not so much about the individual cops, although some of them it is, but about the position of the government that hires and uses the police as their enforcers. At that time, they were willing to negotiate with Nazis, and this is what it got them. But back then, we had a popular front, and I'd like to see a popular front grow today. I mean, people were trying to get one going around Trump, but so many people on the left still think Trump is, you know, better than Biden or something because of his position on Russia, and I think that's a big mistake to go in that direction. But anyway, can we fit one more in? Oh, I think we're pretty much come to the end here. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. This has been What's Going On. Linda Sarsour is the usual host. She's away traveling, and I'll be on the news tonight, as I am Monday through Friday at 5:55 and other extra times that are thrown in around the day and around the schedule. So please always listen to WBAI. Have it set to your dial and listen 24/7. Again, thanks a lot, and I'll see you tonight. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Thanks a lot.
I'm exhausted. Last night I couldn't sleep, but when I did, I could hear bombs in my dreams. Nightmare situation. How could they be so evil? Making mortars out of children and innocent people. We expect the bombs, not knowing where next. Huddle in the corner of my room, trying to protect my little brother as the building shakes like it's possessed. But nothing stronger than the will of the oppressed. I bomb back with my lyrics and rhymes, living the times, trying to break the Palestinian minds. What's hiding in the clouds hanging over my head? My dad risks his life outside to buy bread. The fourth war in my 12th year. At this stage I'm numb, though I haven't felt scared. There's nothing I can do in this case to stay safe. I'm brave, even even though the South could be in my grave. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. Mothers mourn, frightened with grief. White sheets cover bodies that lie on the streets. Buildings turn to ash, but my mind is made of steel. So it doesn't take much for me to heal. Won't lose the will to live or lose our minds. My auntie lost her home, so she lost her life. But she is still alive, but traumatized by the bombs that flew in and dropped at night. My sister couldn't sleep, tried to stop her cries. I said it was fireworks, I was telling her lies. Where's the compassion? This is heartless. It's like they want us all living in darkness. Cutting off water and electricity for hours. They're knocking towers, but that's not knocking the power that I have in my pen. When I'm writing, I'm unstoppable. The microphone is the only escape possible, 'cause that's the way that I can speak my mind. I wonder how does the fighter pilot sleep at night, knowing he can turn the city upside down all of a sudden, slaughtering families with the push of a button. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location, shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom.
Who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance. There are people on the fire. There are children at the camps.
They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they never are the ones to fight and to die. Jackson Browne, Lives in the Balance. Thank you so much, Paul DiRienzo, for that, taking us back several years. Paul DiRienzo, the guest host today for What's Going On. In case you don't realize this, these administrators don't care about you or your children. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming up next.